and now you're going to be a star, a podcast star.
Yeah, get my Andy Moral 15 minutes of fame, eh?
15 minutes of fame, baby. It'll be more, it's probably going to be more like 22, if you don't mind the extra seven.
Sure, I don't mind, Todd.
Everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your loving host for today. My name is Todd. Let me get behind this microphone. Oh, yeah. How's that sound? The pipes, the pitching pipes. This is what they sound like. Yes. Well, today is going to be an interesting podcast for sure. I'm actually super excited about this one. This is a really interesting. So we did a podcast, I don't know, a couple months ago. We talk about this topic probably not enough, but often, and that's contractor safety flow down and how do we manage contractor safety and what do we do with contractor safety. And Tom came on a couple months ago, and he talked about the bathtub curve, that the contractors that are at highest risk are the brand new ones and the really old ones. And, you know, and it's a giant problem. I mean, it's a big problem. It was a huge problem for me my whole career, is that how do you get the value and culture of the host organization, the client company, that's a word I learned today, to flow down to the contractors on site. And so I got this email from this guy who said, you know, I just disagree with you. It's all this crap. You're just making, it sounds like you're making crap up about contractors. I mean, he didn't say it like that because he's Canadian. So he said, I'm sorry to have to tell you that I'm sorry to disagree with you, that I'm sorry, and I'm sorry. I'm just, you know, it was super polite. But nonetheless, I started thinking about what he said, and you know, it is a pretty one-sided perspective that I have, and certainly it's a one-sided perspective that I've presented, which is how does the company fix its contractors? And what Ted basically told me is that if you act like the contractor's the problem, then you're going to put constraints around the contractor. But if you act like the contractor's the solution, then you can actually go out to the contractor and ask them what they need in order to be successful. And I thought, oh, holy crap, it's the new view in a nutshell. How odd and soon we forget that, in fact, we fall prey to the same thing. And that led to several more emails, which led to eventually this podcast. And so you're going to talk to or listen to a conversation between Ted Lux and I, and I think you'll find the conversation pretty interesting. As for my life, wow, if you're interested in the September meeting, and it looks like a whole bunch of you are in Berlin, I'm just shocked. There's still room, and we would love to have you. Please put it on your list of things to do. In fact, we would not, it would be good to have a couple more people, if you know what I mean, Jelly Bean. And we're talking, Bob and I, about doing another one of these workshops in the United States, because I got about 50 million emails saying we ought to do it in the United States. And I just got a hint that said we ought to try to have one in New Orleans. So we'll have it someplace, and it looks like we'll probably have it towards the beginning of the year. So that's wide open for you as well. If you're interested in being a part of one of those workshops, you're always welcome. We'd love to have you. If not, that's groovy too. Other than that, I'm trying to think. The summer seems to be zooming by, as summers always want to do. They always kind of zoom by anyway, sadly. I wish it was slow and drawn out. It would be really nice. It's been a good summer, though. I mean, it's been, I was sitting outside in front of my house underneath an umbrella in a rainstorm last night thinking, yeah, this isn't bad work. This is not bad at all. A little monsoonal rain that rolled in about, it probably rolled in about 2:30, but it kind of stayed for most of the evening. It kind of locked us in, and it was a nice, gentle rain. In Spanish, we'd call it buena lluvia. It was a good rain. It was nice. It was a good thing. So that's pretty much my story. I mean, as much as I'm sorry I don't have any exciting stories about airlines. No, not really. I'm super glad that I don't have any exciting stories about airlines. But I do have a pretty interesting story about contractor safety. And that's what we ought to do. So let's sit back and relax. Maybe we'll talk at the end of this. That would be a good thing. Listen to Ted Lux talk to you about contractor safety from the contractor side.
All right. So my name is Ted Lux. I started my career as a process operator for a company called Union Carbide. And I did that for a number of years. And I got moved into management. And in management, I of course, safety was one of my responsibilities. But I also was involved in maintenance and hiring contractors and budgeting and looking after facilities and things like that. After a number of years doing that, I kind of got tired of that and needed a new career. So I thought about all the things I liked doing the best, and that happened to be safety. So I started my new career in safety approximately 12 years ago, and it's been much more satisfying than what I was doing before.
So talk to me about what is interesting for you in the safety arena. What makes it so much more satisfying?
I like, all sorts of aspects of it. I'm in the industrial construction sector. So I've been in quite a wide variety of different industrial plants over the years. And it's always an interesting thing, you know, with workers bringing them either in as I was hiring them as contractors, or now I'm on the other end where I am with the contractors on the industrial plant sites. And I just enjoy the interaction with the workers on the work sites. I enjoy some of the management aspects. And then, of course, there's always a challenge in meeting the expectations of clients and management and balancing all that with the workers.
How do you define safety?
Ooh.
I know. Isn't that a great question?
I know. It can get a bit esoteric, but I sort of like to think about it that you can do your job during the day and not have to worry about looking over your shoulder, that something's going to get you, and that, you know, a feeling of security and comfort that you're going to go home at the end of the day. And I think that that's probably a fairly broad definition of what safety is.
I totally get your definition. I mean, I get it. It's great. But how do you define that operationally? What's that mean? What's going home safe at the end of the day mean to an operator doing work? That's always the million-dollar question.
Well, I'm not sure that I've ever really thought of that. But, you know, it's just that you're able to perform your tasks and deal with things in a manner that doesn't make you think that something really bad is going to happen to yourself personally. And I've always viewed it in the long term of things. I remember when Canadian legislation brought in WMIS, which is the Workplace Hazardous Materials Information System, and that would have been a long time ago. But to me, that gave me some information that I could use to, like, even in the long term, right? I could look at the safety data sheet and see if something's going to give me cancer in 20 years from now, or if it's going to burn up my skin today. So, you know, from an operational point of view, I think that, you know, putting those two things together, I kind of think that maybe helps define safety a little better.
The secret weapon for safety, maybe, in a way. What's your best safety story?
Oh, a good one?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, okay, if you want to tell a bad one, I'm open for it, but I was thinking good one might come out.
I got a few bad ones. And actually, this good one here is fairly recent. We just had a young worker start as an apprentice welder. She's just out of high school, and she's very eager to learn. She's never been in a welding shop environment, so it's brand new for her. And I gave her some information about, you know, young workers on the work site. I gave her some training, fit tested her for a respirator. And she was all really excited that this kind of stuff was available. and she asks lots of questions. She's not afraid to speak up about things, and to me, that's a fantastic story. A lot of the older people work who's been in the trades for a while, they don't like to ask questions. They think they know enough to get by. So it's exciting to see someone new and have lots of ideas and questions and that I'm able to help them.
Very cool. Very cool. So what's a bad safety story sound like?
Oh, well, a bad safety story is when we had just finished doing some modifications at a gas plant and the handover was incomplete and the client energized the line and there was approximately 1,800 pounds of butane on one side of a blind spool. And just because it wasn't the handover wasn't completed, somebody loosened some flange bolts and nuts on one side of that blind spool and it started leaking. And thankfully there was no source of ignition around and somebody very bravely went and bolted that up very quickly, but that had a great deal of potential to level the whole site.
Wow. Did you do any kind of learning? Did you investigate? How'd you handle that one? That's interesting to me.
Well, I'm usually pretty close to the sharp end of the stick is what is said. So there was a few things that I was able to point out. So the incomplete handover was verbal. So, you know, the client had wanted to energize that part of the system, but, you know, they kind of walked around and they said, well, okay, yeah, this part is kind of done and whatnot. And usually when you put things together, like piping systems, you indicate that the flanges have been torqued tight to specifications, and these things weren't marked like that. So anyways, after the verbal sort of handover between the company I was with and the client, they proceeded to energize that system without following through on their process. So that happened, and then the next day we came in to complete our work thinking that, oh, well, we haven't torqued this up, so we'll finish this, and that resulted in a substantial leak of butane. That was pretty scary.
How normal do you think it was for the client to do a handoff like that and not follow their procedures?
Well, this client is not one of my favorite places.
How's okay, that? And no name shall be used.
No.
It's a lot easier if you don't say the name, so don't say the name. But I'd be curious. So it sounds to me like, and stop me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like that the client was pushing you guys pretty hard to get this up and running. So there was pretty high production pressure.
Yeah.
And they were willing to sort of...
A lot of pressure.
Yeah, they were willing to forego the formality of operations they normally use, like a formal handoff and verification, validation, those kind of things.
Yes.
Were you in a position where you could say no? Not you, as a company. I'm sure you were in the position where you could say no. But were the guys out on the line in a position where they could say no to this?
After the verbal discussion about the handover, our guys left the site. So then it fell into the hands of Night Shift, and they're the ones who energized it. And then you come back the next morning and you're going to continue your work. And, you know, the permitting system probably wasn't as robust as it could have been where they would have said, yeah, energize that.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of things failed simultaneously. Did anyone get in trouble?
Yes.
So was discipline, in your opinion, just and we can speak of this, you know, in more of an esoteric as an example, is discipline valuable in responding to a safety event like the one you talked about?
No, because I don't think discipline, like to discipline our workers would not have been appropriate. On the other side, the client side, that is probably where most of it failed.
But when you go in and work with a client like that, talk me through how do you guys manage high-risk work when the one thing you can't control is the client and the client's systems, the client's processes, the client's deadlines? How do you negotiate that successfully?
Well, Yeah, this is why I did comment to you on one of your earlier podcasts about contractor management.
Yes, this is why you're on the podcast. Is if you comment to me about the podcast, then your punishment is to be on the podcast and to talk about the thing you commented on.
My experience going on to client sites is that they are always telling us how we should be doing our job safely. So this means always check scaffold tags and, you know, don't cross red, do not enter tape and all that stuff. So the funny thing is, we all know that. We work in industrial construction. That's our business. And the things that we don't know, so that we're not going to get exposed to, say, benzene or ammonia or hydrogen gas. The client doesn't do a good job of telling us, the contractor, how they are going to keep us safe from their hazards.
Talk me through that, because...
Okay, so we get hired to do pipe fitting and welding and, you know, modifications on different systems, and that's what we're good at. We know how to operate aerial work platforms and how to set up an exclusion zone for a crane lift. That's what we do. We're good at that. We don't know anything about the contents of the piping systems. We don't know how the operators de-energize those systems, you know, verifying that a system has been de-energized. And we never get told that. We're always told how to do our job safely, as if we don't know.
So this is pretty important, what you're sharing with the world here, and that is that we are, our contractor safety programs tend to tell contractors how to be safe on stuff they already know how to be safe on, because that's the stuff they do all the time. Scaffold tags, aerial platforms, etc. What you're telling me is that a contractor safety program really should focus on the special hazards, the unique hazards that's on the client's site that the contractor is going to be exposed to. That's brilliant. But here's my question. How do I know you're good at the nuts and bolts? How do I know you're good at scaffold tags until I go out and make you prove it to me?
Contractors, they have a pre-qualification process. And so they have a whole bunch of questions here. So do you check your workers' qualifications? So are they like a journeyman pipe fitter and a journeyman welder, a journeyman crane operator? And we could check all those. And they say, do you have training for all sorts of things? And we say, yes. Here we have a training program very similar to the OSHA 10-hour thing. It's called construction safety training. So we provide that with all our workers. We provide aerial work platform training. We provide confined space training, all protection training, provide all that evidence. So, and we also come up with experienced workers. We got insurance. We got workers' compensation coverage, equipment inspections, all those things. They're all covered in the pre-qualification for contractors.
So if you could give one, well, not one, don't limit it. If you could sit in a room fearlessly and tell a contractor the best, a client, the best way to manage a contractor safety program, what would that sound like? Where would that start, and what would it include?
Okay, so I think it's a two-way street. We've got trained and qualified and experienced workers, and if we have some who are like not experienced, like apprentices, that we have a mentor program and all those things. So we have to prove that and demonstrate that to the client. What about the reciprocal part? Is your permitting system going to be robust enough that you tell us what's going on there? So, like, for an example, I've been on over 60 different industrial plant sites making all sorts of, nasty things. We don't always get told about that stuff. They don't tell us, there's benzene here, but it's kind of like an aside. They don't tell us where we could encounter benzene, why we should be worried if we're going to encounter benzene, and how they are going to protect us.
Is it because they assume their job is to manage kind of normal industrial safety?
Yeah, but they don't demonstrate that to us. Like we got that. It's like me and you shake their hand and they say, well, prove to me that you're who you are, and they don't reciprocate.
So what you're saying is that you come to them qualified and credentialed, insured, bonded, ready to do work. You don't have the same reciprocity, the same equal understanding of the qualifications of the client in their ability to manage a high risk project site. That's a really interesting way to look at it.
So, and I think that I told you, like, in my email, a lot of incidents that we see as pretty minor, and I'll give you an example. We had some guys doing some welding, and we had the fire blanket up, and we had a firewall, and then a small piece of packaging foam that was kind of jammed into a louver caught fire from a spark. And, you know, we didn't see the foam. It was left there by the client. Anyways, our fire watch, he saw it. It was all over in 12 seconds. And so I thought that was a great thing. I thought that was fantastic. He kept asking me, so what was the root cause? And finally I said to him, I says, you guys forgot to take that foam packaging out. And he kind of looked at me and wasn't very happy that I had said that. So on the other hand, you know, you talk a lot about capacity for things in your podcast, and thought demonstrating capacity by having the right worker in the right place and having a plan. And we dealt with it. Instead, it was all over in 10 seconds.
Oh, I would agree completely. In fact, I will tell you the reason what you did was test your firewatch program, and it passed. The reason you have a firewatcher is in case there's a fire.
The client, he just wasn't happy. You know, like I said to him, I says, "Well, what do you want me to know?" I said, "We put out the fire, and you know what? The extinguisher, it got recharged the very same day. So wanted me to come up with something deep, meaningful, and there just wasn't there."
That's amazing. So Ted, let's we're about out of time, of course, sadly, but let's wrap up. What are the important messages from somebody working on a contract site, somebody working for a client on a client site? What are the important things we ought to be thinking about as a safety community?
Well, I think that we need to talk to our clients a little bit more about how they are going to keep us safe instead of, you know, like, I mean, I go to site orientations, and I'm not kidding, for people to tell me the same thing that I was told at previous orientations, and that's part of the industry that I work in. They need to, we need to ask them to tell us how you are going to prove to us that systems are de-energized. Tell us how we can protect ourselves from those dangers. Tell us how you are going to take steps to make sure that systems are de-energized. And, you know, it doesn't just work out for pipe fitters and welders. This works out for electricians and instrument technicians as well, because they come on these sites and they stand the risk of getting exposed to these things just as much as pipe fitters and welders do.
Thank you, my friend. That was really a good conversation. I learned a lot today.
Okay. Oh, that's good. I'm glad. I learn a lot listening to your podcasts.
What'd you think? Thanks, Ted. You know, Ted wrote this email that said he was less than happy with our discussion on contractor flow down, contractor safety management. And I actually think he brings a really interesting perspective in sort of the classic operational learning model that we talk about so much. The view from inside his tunnel is definitely different than the view from inside the owner's tunnel, the client, as he called it. the person who has the lets the contract, not the person who gets the contract. And that's really probably good for us to hear. I actually think this is a really valuable use of podcast time. I'm glad this happened. It's good. It's really good and helpful. Because I do think, in thinking back in my past, we did spend an awful lot of time sort of managing the stuff that's easy to manage and not a lot of time managing the stuff that's harder to manage. And I think that's Ted's point. But nonetheless, I'm just proud of him. I mean, yeah, he gutted up, man. I had to talk him into it a little bit, you know, a little bit of plying, a little bit of leverage. But I think he did a super good job. What a great podcast. Fun to listen to and fun to hear. I'm on the road right now, but man, I sure want to thank you for the book, the Workplace Fatalities book. You guys really did a good job. It's a lot of people are reading it, and I like the fact that it's causing a lot of discussions. I was just talking to Jim Howe this week, and he said he'd like to put together a group to have a discussion. He said there's lots of it he disagrees with pretty dramatically, but he'd like to bring a group of people together to talk about it. And I do think that's an important way to think about fatality. So if you haven't picked that book up, it's probably time, especially now if they're going to have meetings to talk about how bad it is. You want to be in on that baby as soon as possible, I'm sure of that. Until then, my friends, have fun. Thanks for listening to the podcast. You've made us the number one podcast in the whole wide world. We're probably really close to 350,000 certified downloads on this baby. That's a lot. Tell your friends. Tell them to subscribe. That makes a difference. But mostly, learn something new every single day. That's important to me. Have as much fun as you possibly can. And for goodness sakes, be safe.